You may recall that we started in Agadita and we left off here on Daf Yudom and Aleph. That's where we got up to. And we'll count down from the top of the page, just about 10 lines down. Now, we had mentioned, the last thing we mentioned in the Agadita was one of the Bnei Noach, Yefes. And we had a long discussion about how the Shekhinah would eventually come back to the descendants, not of Yefes, but of Shem, and certainly not Cham, that goes without saying. Now, once we're ready, interested in those psukim in Bereishis, in the 10th chapter of Bereishis, where the Torah goes through the descendants of Noach, so the Gemara continues, and a lot of what we're going to do today is a combination of geography and history, and that's what we have to do. So the Pasuk speaks about Cush. Cush was the son of Cham, and it says about him, Sabta Verama Visabtacha. Notice that there are two locations here that are very similar in name, and that's Savta and Savtacha. And that's not coincidental. Tani Rav Yosef, we have a brisa of Rav Yosef regarding these two names of places. And Rav Yosef says that Sakistan Gavasayu and Sakistan Baraisa. These were two villages, and one surrounded the other. So Gavaisa means the inner city, or the inner village, and Baraisa was the outer one that circled around the inner one. And they were really two villages that were very proximate to each other. Bein chad lechad, the distance between one and the other was just Mea Parsi, was Mea Parsos, which is the equivalent of 8,000 Amma. The Kefa Alpha Parsi. And there was an outer mountain range that surrounded both of these villages, and that was even larger. That was 1,000 Parsos. Now, the Pasuk goes on to tell us about the son of Cush, who is the son of Cham, and his name was Nimrod. Very mighty, powerful person on the face of the globe. Vatehi reishis mamlachto Bavel. He began his kingship in Bavel. Bavel today is considered Iraq. The Erech v'Akeid v'Kalneh. And his malchus, his kingship, stretched out all the way to another land, which is called Eretz Shinar, in those locations that are delineated here in the Torah. Bavel, kimashma'a. That's the area that we know even in the time of the Gemara, we knew it as Bavel. Erech, at the time of the Gemara, had a different name. It was called Orichus. And Akkad is known by the name of Baskar, and Kalneh is called Nofer Ninfi. And a lot of these places, the historians are able to locate even today, again by different names, but they can tell, if not the exact pinpoint location, they can know the general location. Now, when it comes to a place which is called Nofer Ninfi, the Gemara actually tells us in Masechet Rosh Hashanah that Reish Lakish went to visit and participate in a wedding in a place called Ninfi. And it's interesting because what happened at that place, there was a kala, there was a bride, and the word in our Gemara is Kalneh. And the Gemara identifies Kalne as Nofer Ninfi. Now, Kalne has the same letters as the word Kala in it. So it's very interesting that this place took on the name of Kala. Maybe it was a place where many important weddings took place. But at the time of the Gemara, this location, Kalne, was called by a different name, Ninfi. Then the Parsha tells us, again in Bereishis Perek Yud, Min ha'aretz ahi yotza Ashur. Now, here we have two possibilities. It's a kind of an ambiguous phrase. What does it mean, yotza Ashur? One way of understanding it is that there was a person by the name of Ashur, and he left the land. This is the way Rashi interprets it. Why did he leave that land? Because that was the land where they rebelled against God, which is called the Dor HaFloga, and he wanted to get away from the Dor HaFloga. He didn't want to be part of the rebellion against God. So that the name Ashur here is the name of a person, and the Torah is praising this person because he deliberately left the area where the Dor HaFloga was taking place. Even though apparently he could have inherited the throne and he would have had those four cities that were mentioned early in the Pasuk, which are Bavel, Erech, Akkad, and Kalena. And Tani Rav Yosef, Ishur Ze Silek. There's a city which is called Ashur, and it's called today in our time Silek, which might mean that he left, referring to the original creator of that city by the name of Ashur. He established that city, he left the city, and he checked out because he didn't want to partake in the Dor HaFloga. That seems to be one interpretation that is reflected in Rashi. However, others want to say that Ashur here in this Pasuk, which the Gemara identifies as Silek, is the name of a district, the name of an area, not the name of a person. And what it means is, in this Pasuk, is that Nimrod himself left Bavel and he established his kingship in Ashur, meaning the land of Ashur. So that's a different approach, and it touches on Nimrod. The pasuk continues and says, "Vayiven es Ninve, v'es Rechovos, ir v'es Kolach." And he built these cities. Now, if it refers to Ashur, or a person, as Rashi would have it, then God is actually rewarding him, because since he checked out and left the area of the HaFloga, and he gave up on four cities, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu reimbursed him, so to speak, and gave him four cities as a reward. If, on the other hand, we're talking about Nimrod, then the Pasuk is testifying that Nimrod built these cities. Nineveh is the first, Kimashma'o, meaning we know about Nineveh. Nineveh is a famous city, and in Yonah, in Sefer Yonah, it was the city that was called Ha'ir HaGdolah. It was a gigantic metropolis, and it was the capital of this land which is called Eretz Ashur. And Rehovot is called Ir in our language at the time of the Talmud. And when it says Rechovot Ir, Zo Pras de Meshan, we should identify this area as the area of Meshan. Meshan is an area which is on the Euphrates River, close to Bavel, and the Gemara tells us in Kiddushin that unfortunately the Jews in Meshan were not on the highest level, and genealogically they were called Mamzerim, and therefore the Bnei Bavel would not marry girls from Mishan because of the reputation of that city of Mishan. And Kolach Zu Fras de Bursif, that was again the name at the time of the Gemara. Bursif is located also very close to Bavel, and the people in Bursif were not prolific in their Torah studies like the Bnei Bavel were. In Bavel they studied Torah on the highest level. And the reason why this area is called Bursif is because if you take this word and split it into two, it's Bar Sif. Bor is an ignorant person. And Sif means that it's empty. So it's an empty bor, which means a person who is empty in this case of Torah, because in that area they were not involved in Torah study. The next pasuk says, V'yes resen bein Ninveh bein Kolach hi ha'ir ha'gdola. Now, it's again a very ambiguous phrase. What do you mean here, hi ha'ir ha'gdola? Is that a description of resen? Is it a description of Ninveh? Or is it a description of Kolach? We don't know. But the Gemara helps us out over here. The Gemara identifies Resen as Aktisphon, which is mentioned in Gittin as an area that's outside of the bounds of Eretz Yisrael. And when the Shliach came with a get from that place, he had to testify that the get was written Lishma, Bifani Nechtam, Bifani Nechtam. And that's the area outside of Eretz Yisrael. Then we have Hi Ha'ir Agdola. Eini Odea, I don't know, Im Ninveh, Ir Agdola is this pasuk that describes this great metropolis referring to Ninveh, Im Resen, or perhaps it's referring to Resen. The Gemara knew that it could not be referring to Kolach because Kolach was a much smaller city. And the Gemara answers, Kshu Omer, since the Pasuk in Ninveh, Pasuk in Yonah identifies Ninveh as Aisa Ir Gdol Elokim, Mahalach Shloshes Yomim, to get from one side of the city to the other took you 3 days, and the Omer, Ninveh Hi Ha'ir HaGdola. Ninveh is this large city. Now it could be that Kolach was located, let's say, in the south, and Ninveh was in the north, and Resen was in between. And Ninveh eventually expanded its boundaries, and it swallowed up both Resen and Kolach. So all these three cities are really part of a gigantic country, which is called Ninveh. Now, once we were already interested in the various names in the Torah of different places and different people, the Gemara now quotes the Parsha of the Meraglim. And it says about the Meraglim that Vayalu Banegev Vayavod Chevron, and this is a reference to Kalev. Kalev was the only one of the Meraglim who went to Chevron to pray that Hashem should spare us from the Atzas Meraglim. And Chevron was known as a place that was inhabited by great giants. And the rest of the representatives of the Shvat and the Meraglim, they did not have the gumption to go into Chevron. Only Kalev went alone. And who was there in Kalev, when Kalev came to Chevron? Shom over there, he met Achis Achimon, Sheshai, Visalme. Now, these three fellows are not fellows that you want to meet, you know, up a dark alley, because Yelidei Hanak, they were born to giants, and their names indicate how powerful they were. Tana, we have in a Brisa, Achimon is called Achimon because Miyumon Sheba'achim. He was the strongest, the most mighty of the three brothers. Sheshai is called by that name, Shemesim Es Haoretz Kishchisus. He destroys the land. When he stepped on the ground, anything on the globe was completely destroyed by the sheer weight of his feet, and it went down into the Aretz. Talmai, why is he called Talmai? Shemesim Es Haoretz Tlamim Tlamim. That when he walked on the ground, it was like a plow that makes furrows in the ground. Achimon bona anos, sheshai bona alush, talmai bona talbush. There were gigantic cities that were established by each of these three brothers, these three giants. Yelidei Hanak, and they are called the children of the great giant, Shema'anikim hachava b'komosam. They were so tall that it looked like the sun itself and its radiant light surrounded their necks, each one of their necks, because the word anak really comes from the shoresh of a jewel. Anak is a jewel, if you translate it literally. And they were so tall that the sun like broke through almost the clouds and surrounded each one of their necks, and it made it look like they had a jewel around their neck. Now at this point, I want to open up the English translation, and it's very interesting that in the Art Scroll, they actually published a map, an ancient map that delineates all these areas. And you get a picture of where Europe is, where Africa is, where the Mediterranean Sea is, and there's Assyria and all these countries. So they tell you exactly where they believe these places that are mentioned in the Bible and described, and they are identified here in the Talmud, where they were located on the map. And one of the things that I found interesting was that he writes about Savta and Savtecha. We shouldn't share this with the grandmothers necessarily, but anyway, they are names that are very similar, and they are complementary parts of the same region. And this region was surrounded by a mountain chain, and the two towns were called Outer Sakistan and Inner Sakistan. Now he tells us that the historians believe that they can identify Sakistan in our day, and it's a district in an area called Drangiana, which spans West Afghanistan and East Iran. So because Afghanistan and Iran are very close to each other. So that's interesting that they were able to figure out where these locations are on the map of today. They identify a mountain range that surrounds Outer Sakistan, which in turn surrounds Inner Sakistan. The space between the two, outer and inner, is approximately 300 miles, but the circumference of this mountain chain of Outer Sakistan was 1,000 parsa, which is approximately 3,000 miles. So it's a significant area. Now, as we said before, Nimrod was one of the most powerful men in all of history, and no doubt the most powerful man in the ancient world. And we said that, what else did I want to add here? Oh, Ashur is called Assyria, and it's a country located west of the Tigris River. Selak is a city named Seleucia, which is on the Tigris River. And it's about 20 miles southeast of modern Baghdad, in the middle of Iraq. And he tells you a whole history about what happened in this geographic area. The region was conquered by the Sasanians, and the name of Salesusha was named in honor of the first king, whose name was Ardashir the First. And he quotes a Gemara elsewhere in Shas that identifies Ardashir as a place that faces Ctesiphon. So again, I don't know if any of this interests you, but if it does, you know, you have all these extensive notes here of people who really took this Gemara seriously and they researched it. Nineveh, they tell us, is situated in on the Tigris River, and it's in northern Iraq, about 60 miles north of a location which we identify as Ashur. And Nineveh is the most famous of the cities that are mentioned here in this context. Now, there's a city called Rehovot, which is very fascinating. Rehovot means wide avenues. And Mishan, which is now being identified as Rehovot, was the home to numerous people who were genealogically unfit. As we said before, there's a lot of Mamzerus there. And he identifies it as an island that is between the Euphrates River and the Tigris River. And he says that there's another area that we said is called Barsepia, which is situated again on the Euphrates River. And he tells you where the ruins are and where you can find it in central Iraq. This is mamish a piece of research here that they did. And each one of these cities that are mentioned here, they try to identify them on today's globe. And he says that the verse describes Nineveh later on at the time of Jonah as the great city. And the Torah is already describing Nineveh way before it became a great city, because in the future it will become a great city. So the Torah sometimes uses names of places for their future descriptions. Okay, let's go on, because I want to get to another sugya today. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Amar Rebbe, Asida Romi Shetipol Biad Paras. Now this makes sense. Why? Because Romi was responsible for the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, and Paras was responsible for the rebuilding of the Beis Hamikdash, that same second Beis Hamikdash. So that ultimately, the nation that will destroy the Mikdash will be conquered by the nation that built the Mikdash. That's divine judgment. Now, how does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi know such a thing? Shenemar, the Nevuah of Yirmiyah, he prophesizes on the ultimate revenge that Hashem will mete out to the nations of the world. And the pasuk says, Lachen shim'u atzas Hashem asher ya'atz el Edom. Edom, as you know, are the descendants of Esau. And Machshavosav. So these are the plans of the Romans, who are the Edomites. Asher chashavol yoshvei teiman im lo yis chavum tzeire hatzon. So we're going to have a whole discussion here about what tzeire hatzon means. Im lo yasim aleim nevehem. So Edom in this pasuk is Rome, and because they came from Edom, they're called Rome. And tzeire tzon, the young sheep, is a reference to the Persians. And he says here in a note that we have to wait till the Gemara to understand why the young sheep is a reference and allusion to the Persians. And Yirmiyah is now prophesizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will mete out a punishment to Rome, and the Parsium, the Persians, will crush and exile the Romans from their country. That's the prophecy of Yirmiya. Maskifle Rava Bar Ula, my mashma dahai tzeire tzon parasu. What is your proof that the phrase tzeire tzon used by Yirmiya in his prophecy is a reference to paras? The tziv, the pasuk says in Daniel, ha'ayil, ayil is the male sheep, which is tzon, ashera isi bal hakranayim, malche modai uparas. So we see that the ayil, which is tzon, is a reference to paras. So now Rabbi asks a fine question, v'ema, perhaps it's a reference not to paras, but this tzire tzon is a reference to Yavan, tichsiv, because I have a pasuk that calls Yavan by the term Tzfir. Tzfir is a kind of a goat. And Hatzafir Sa'ir Melech Yavan. So we see that Yavan is also called by the name Tzon. So the Gemara tries to answer this question of Rabba. Kisolik Rav Chaviva Bar Surk Mokei. Amora Kami Dahu Rabbanon. So Rav Chaviva brought this question from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, and he asked Rabbi's question in front of one of the Chachamim. Amalei, so that Chacham responded, Mandalo Yoda Prushe Kroi Mosif Tiyuvta L'Rabbi. Whoever doesn't know how to interpret the verses of the Torah, he's the one who asked this question to Rebbe. Why? Temai tzeire hatzon. What is the meaning of the phrase tzeire hatzon? Zutra dachohi. It's the youngest of the brothers. And that refers to paras, titani. We have a teaching of Rav Yosef, tiras ze paras. Back to the Chumash in Breishis Yud, when it mentions the names of the children of Yefes, the one who's named at the very end is Paras. He's the youngest of the brothers. And therefore, since Tiras, which is Paras, is the youngest of the brothers, therefore Tzeire Tzon must be referring to Paras. Omar Rabba Barachon Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi Asida Romi Shetipo Biad Paras. How do we know, and we saw this already earlier, the name of Yeshua, that ultimately Rome is going to fall into the hands of Paras? And you may recall that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi derived that from a Nevuah of Yirmiya. Rabba wants to derive it from a Kal v'chomer. Umam migdash rishon shebino'u b'nei Shem. No, it's Klal Yisrael, who are descendants of Shem, the son of Noach, built the first base on Migdash. V'chrivua kazdiim, and the Babylonians destroyed the Migdash. At the end, naflu kazdiim b'yad parsiim. The destroyers of the base on Migdash rishon eventually fell to the hands of the Persians, and this happened during the time of Belshazzar. He was the king of the Kazdim, and he fell to Dariush Hamadai and to his son-in-law Koresh Aparsi. So we see that the builders of the second Beis HaMikdash would destroy the nation that was responsible for the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. Is therefore Migdash Sheni Shebino Parsiim Vichrivu Romiim Enudinshi Yiplu Romiim Biad Parsiim. If the Babylonians, the Kazdiim, fell in the hands of the Parsiim, then for sure the Romans who destroyed the second base of Migdash would certainly fall into the hands of the Parsiim who built the second base of Migdash. But the Gemara now quotes a dissenting opinion. Omar Rav, Asida Paras Shetipo Biad Romi. In the future, Paras, just the opposite, is going to fall into the hands of the Romans. Imagine, Where's the divine justice here? The Romans destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. The Persians were responsible for building the Beis HaMikdash. And now the Persians are going to fall to the hands of the Parsians. Inu nami hokasasre beiknisht. I'm sorry. Amalei Rav Kahana Rav Asi l'Rav b'noi biad sosre. Is it possible that those who built the Beis HaMikdash, that's called the Benoye, a reference to Paras, would now fall into the hands of the Sosre, of those who destroy the Beis HaMikdash, Amalu, in Gzeras Melechu? In other words, there are certain things about history that we can never understand. They're beyond human comprehension. And that's called the Gzeras Melech. Now, I have a long footnote here in which he tries, by quoting various commentators, to explain why this happened. And a lot of it has to do with the Persians. The Persians really were not totally interested in creating a Beis HaMikdash for the Jews, and they were always suspicious that the Jews would rebel against them. And therefore, when they built the Beis HaMikdash, the Pasuk in Ezra describes how they built it in such a way that there were shalosh shuros of Evan, shura achashal eitz. Anyway, to make a long story short, they built it in a structure which would allow them to destroy the Beis HaMikdash the very moment that the Jews would rebel against them. So already from the beginning, when they gave the green light, the Persians, to build the Beis HaMikdash, they already had an evil thought and an evil scheme that eventually they would destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, if that be the case, we have a principle that with regard to Goyim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzarif Machshava Ro L'Maisa, since they already had in mind that they would destroy the Mikdash, it's as if they already destroyed the Mikdash, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that they would fall into the hands of those who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, namely the Romans. And he ends up by saying, Kidolodia Shegam Heim Bechlal Asosrim. And this would prove and established that the Persians were also part of this movement to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Ika Diamri Omalahu, some say that Rav responded, he said, Inu Nami Hakasasre Beiknishta, that the Persians were actually responsible for the destruction of a number of synagogues, and therefore they lost their merit for building the Beis HaMikdash. Tanya Nami Hochi, we also have a brisa to support this. Asida Paras Shetito Tipol Biad Romi. The Persians would fall at the hands of the Romans for two reasons. Chada, the Sasre Beknishta, because they destroyed synagogues. We owed, and furthermore, Gzeras Melechu Sheyiplu Bonim Biad Sosrim. Even though the Parsim were the builders of the Beis HaMikdash, the second Mikdash, nevertheless, it's a Gzeras Melech. It was the divine will and decree that they, the very builders of the Beis HaMikdash, the Parsim, would fall into the hands of the Sosrim of the Romans who destroyed the Mikdash. The Omer of Yehuda Marav, Ein Ben David Ba, Achetivshot Malchus Romi Harsha B'chol Olam Kulo, Tisha Chadoshim. There's going to be a period of 9 months in which the Romans, the evil Romans, would control the entire world. And these are the very painful periods of almost the year before the Geula, before the Mashiach comes. Shenemar, this is a prophecy of Micha regarding the Melech HaMashiach. Lachem Yitneim Ad Eis Yoleda Yoleda V'Yeser Echav Yashuvun Al Bnei Yisrael. So let me just read the English translation. He says, therefore, he will surrender them until the time that no one who gives birth has given birth. Then the rest of the Mashiach's brothers will return with the children of Israel. And he adds a note over here. He says that Rome will rule the entire world for the length of time that a woman bears a child, which is 9 months. Then the rest of Mashiach's brothers, means the Shevet Yehuda, will join the other Shvatim of Israel, form a unified kingdom in Eretz Yisrael. Ah, that's what we're waiting for. A unified kingdom in Eretz Yisrael. The pain of a woman in childbirth is frequently a metaphor for the suffering that will accompany the birth of the Messianic era. He refers you to Yeshayahu, Perek Samach Vav. For 9 months, the anguish will be particularly acute, and this corresponds to the 9 months of pregnancy. At the end of 9 months, the Mashiach will rescue the entire world, and the Jewish people in particular, from the hands of Rome. He quotes the Ben Yehoyada, who's the Ben Ishchai, who explains that when Rebekah was pregnant with Yaakov and Esav, Yaakov said to Esav, "My brother, there are two worlds before us, this world and the world to come. This world has food, drink, marriage. The world to come has none of these characteristics. If you're willing, take this world, and I'll take the world to come." Esav was willing, but because of his wickedness, he never had the opportunity to have this world in its entirety. Therefore, before the Yemos HaMashiach, he's given 9 months. That's the Edom that descend from Esav, corresponding to the 9 months of the womb of world domination. So in other words, since he was willing to take this world and give the next world to Yaakov, he was rewarded with 9 months of world domination. Okay, Rabbi, so with that, we finished the Agadita, and now we're going back to discuss the Lishkas Farhedrin. You may remember that when the Kohen Gadol was quarantined for a week before Yom HaKippurim, he was situated in an area which is called the Lishkas HaFarhedrin. And now the Gemara wants to know, from the perspective of the laws of Mezuzah, does this Lishka, where the Kohen Gadol lived for only 1 week out of the entire year, constitute a bias? It's a residence, and therefore the mitzvah of Uksavtem al Mezuzah Beisecha would apply to the Lishkas HaFarhedrin. Tana Rabbanan, kol al lishkos shahayu b'mishkan b'migdash lo hayu lehem mezuzah chutz mi lishkas farhedrin. None of the other offices which were not used as residences were equipped with mezuzahs. There was no mitzvah to put up a mezuzah in any other lishkos except for the lishkas farhedrin shahayu b'beis dira l'kohen gadol, that for 7 days he lived and resided in the Lishkas HaFarhedrin, as if it was his own house, with all the facets of residency. And therefore, says the Braisa, we need a mezuzah in the Lishkas HaFarhedrin. Amar Rav Yehuda made the following comment, Halo kama lishkos hoyu b'migdash shayu lehem beis dira. The Shomrim of the Migdash, those who were in charge of security, they had lishkos where they slept, and they ate, and that was a beis dira. And nevertheless, lo hayu lehem mezuzah, el lishkas farhedrin. The only lishka that had a mezuzah was the lishkas farhedrin, where the Kohen Gadol lived for that week before Yom Kippur. But in the other lishkos, even those that were occupied and the residents were the Shomrei HaMikdash, they didn't have a mezuzah. And what's unique about the Lishkas Farhedrin? Gzera Hoysa, this is Gzeras Chachamim, and according to the strict letter of the law, even a Beis Dira that's very temporary would not require a mezuzah, with the exception of the Lishkas Farhedrin, and this was a special enactment that the Chachamim required, which again is not according to the strict letter of the law, that the Lishkas Farhedrin of the Kohen Gadol would be equipped with a mezuzah. And the reason for this gzera, as Rashi explains, based on the Gemara later on, is because Shalom Yomru Machmas She'ein Shal Mizuzer Kohen Gadol Chavish Beveis Asurim. We're going to learn later on that if a criminal is locked up in a jail and he resides in that jail for possibly a very long period of his life, nevertheless, there's no mezuzah on a jail. Because we're going to learn later on that a bias for a mezuzah is a place where you have freedom and you can move in and out as you please. If we lock someone up and he's incarcerated, that's not a bias for a mezuzah. But yet, Lishkas Farhedrin, people will say, well, I don't see a mezuzah on the Lishkas Farhedrin. It must be that the Kohen Gadol is locked up in the Lishkas Farhedrin. Now the Gemara wants to know, what's the logic of Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda insists that Meikar Adin, even Lishkas Farhedrin, does not require a mezuzah. Because since the Kohen Gadol lived there for a week, why isn't it called a bias? And the Gemara says, "My time with Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rabba, Kasov Rabbi Yehuda called bias she'eno osui limos hachama limos hakshamim, eno bias." Let's say you have a house which is a summer home, or you have a house which is a winter home. You don't live there the entire year; you live there during certain seasons. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that you're not chayav a mezuzah. That's not called a bias. If this bias is only for Yemos HaChamo or only for Yemos HaKshavim, it does not qualify as a bias. It's lacking, shall we say, in a certain significance, a certain chashivus. And Lishkas Farhedrin, well, the Kohen Gadol lived there, but only for a week. And therefore, it's not a dira kvua, it's not a place that's permanent, and it doesn't have the chashivus of a bias. It doesn't generate a chi of mezuzah, except for the gzera that we mentioned earlier. Now, although this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, if we go back to the opinion before Rabbi Yehuda in the Braisa, Kol Alishkos Shehoyim Migdash Lohayim Ben Mezuzah Chutz Min Lishkas Farhedrin Shehoyim Beis Dira L'Kohen Gadol. So the Tanakama, otherwise known as the Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda, holds that if you have a base dira for a full week, that itself makes it into a bias that requires a mezuzah. Hence, the Lishkas Farhedrin, where the Kohen Gadol established his domicile for a week, was obligated meikar adin. According to the strict letter of the law, the way we read the Pasuk in Chumash, uksavtem al mezuzos beisecha, that you have to put up a mezuzah on the Lishkas Farhedrin. It's not a takonis chachamim, as we said in Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda is going to attack the Chacham and say, well, wait a minute. There were many other Lishkos where there was a base Dira. But the answer is that there's something special about the base Dira of the Kohen Gadol during these 7 days. And that was his home for 7 days. According to Rabbanon, that's enough to generate a shame bias. Simply because for 7 days, the Kohen Gadol lived there, and that's where he lived. Okay. Now, we have this machlokes between the Tanakam and the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda about an area where you live for a short period of time. According to Rabbi Yehuda, you're not chayav in mezuzah. According to Chachamim, you should be chayav in mezuzah. If for that week you live there, just like the Kohen Gadol, the Lishkas Farhedrin, it requires a mezuzah. So what are we going to do with a sukkah? We live in a sukkah for 7 days, and we have to make it into our bias. According to Rabbi Yehuda, if you live there for 7 days, it's not a bias. Even if you have an area where you live for the entire winter, it's not a bias. How much more so not an area where you live for 7 days, and that's why the Lishkas Farhedrin, Meikar Adin, according to strict letter of the law, was not chayv in a mezuzah. And if that be the case, then we understand very well that a sukkah, which is a place you live for 7 days, is parted from mezuzah. But what are we going to say according to the Chachamim? this would be an interesting chumrah that we'll have to take up for next sukkah, that every sukkah needs a mezuzah. And why is that? Because we live in the sukkah for 7 days, like the Lishkas Sanhedrin of the Kohen Gadol. Eis ve'abaye. Abaye asks the following question, Vaksiv. The Pasuk says in Amos, this is a kasha that Abaye is asking to Rava. And the Pasuk says, V'kesi. This is how God, Amos, is prophesying that God will mete out punishment to the evildoers of Israel. Bayis ha-choref al bayis ha-kayetz. Whether it's God is promising that he will, how do you say, smite or smote, or he will destroy the house of a winter or the house of a summer. So you see that even a house of a summer or a house of a winter is called a bayis. Amalei, no, that's not how you read the pasuk. Rabba responds and says, bayis choref u bayis kayetz ikri. It's called a bayis choref. It's not a bayis, it's a bayis choref. When the Torah says that you have to put a mezuzah on your bayis, it's not referring to a bayis choref or a bayis kayetz. Bayis stoma lo ikri, you would never give the name bayis to an area that's only used as a summer home or a winter home. Eis ve'abaye, Abaye asks another kasha on to Rabba. What happens in a case of peros that are chayv in maser? You haven't yet taken off maser. So the law is, as soon as you bring them into the bayis, they become tevel, and you're not allowed to eat them until you take off maser. And once the Mishnah in Masros touches on the question of entering into the bayis, because that's when the grains now receive a shem tevel, what happens on Sukkos? If I take grains that had been harvested, I had not yet taken them into the bayis, I took them into my sukkah. And we have a Mishnah in Masechta Masros that records the following machlokes. Sukkos chag bechag, Rabbi Yehuda Machayev. Rabbi Yehuda says that a sukkah is called a bayis, and now you have what's called Re'ias Pnei Abayis, it's Tevel. Chachamim Potrim. The Chachamim hold that a sukkah is not called a bayis. V'tani Allah, and it was a brice that was attached to that Mishnah in Masros, Rabbi Yehuda Machayev, B'Eruv. Rabbi Yehuda says that a sukkah has the din of a bias with regard to three different dinim, one of which we've learned already here, maser. The second is eruv. That means if you have a sukkah that opens up into a chotzer, and there are many different batim that share that chotzer, then the sukkah is considered one of those batim, and you have to get that bala sukkah, bala bias, to participate in the eruv chotzeres. And mezuzah. And Rabbi Yehuda says that a sukkah is obligated in mezuzah. Because again, just the same extent that he's mechayev you in maser, he considers it a bias. And he makes it obligatory and critical that he participates in the Erev Chatzeres because it's a bias. Logically then, therefore, he should conclude, which he says here explicitly, that in a sukkah you need a mezuzah, it's a bayis. But wait a second, this doesn't make any sense. Because we just finished saying that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Lishkas Sanhedrin does not require a mezuzah, mikra din, because it's no different than a bayis for the summertime, bayis for the wintertime. It's a bias for a set duration, a set period of time. That's not called a bias. So how do we reconcile, says Abaye, these two positions of Rabbi Yehuda, that on the one hand, Lishkas Sanhedrin is not chayav in mezuzah, just like a bias for the summer months is not chayiv. And on the other hand, a sukkah is considered a bias, even though he's only living there for 7 days. The chitema, perhaps you'll say, midrabbanan, that enochinami, Rabbi Yehuda would say a sukkah is not chayiv in mezuzah on a deraisa level. And on a deraisa level, when you take your peros into a sukkah, just like you're not chayiv in mezuzah, you're not chayiv in masros. And this whole enterprise of a sukkah being elevated to the status of bais, that's all midrabbanan. Bishlema, says the Gemara, Eruv u'mezuzah, Ikol ha-meimar midrabbanan. You could possibly argue that the Rabbanan will machayev you on a mezuzah, even in a place that the Torah doesn't obligate you on a mezuzah. And certainly Eruv, which is an entire enactment, an institution, which is the Rabbanan, they could say that a sukkah is considered a bais. Fine. Elamaser mikol ha-meimar midrabbanan? How could it be that the Rabbanan would say that you're chayv in maser when min haTorah you're not chayv in maser? That's a very dangerous proposition. And here we turn to the Daf Yud Amud Beis. Because Dilma Osi Lafrushe min achiyuv al haptur. The law is that maser means you take peiros that are chayv in maser, and from peiros that are chayv in maser, you can mafrish maser. But if you have peiros that already are potter from maser, maser was already removed, you cannot use those peros to be mafresh maser on other peros that are obligated in maser. Now, if on a doraisa level, a sukkah is not a bias, and therefore, according to Torah law, when the peros were taken into the sukkah, they are not chayiv in maser, that is called a ptur. But look at the takola that you're exposing Klal Yisrael to a very vulnerable situation of min haptur al achiyuv. They're going to assume that these peros are chayiv in maser because they were brought into the sukkah. Little unbeknown to them, that's only derabbanan, but on the deraisa level, they're not chayiv in maser. They think that you're chayiv in maser, and they're going to use that as hafrosha on peros that are chayiv in maser. That's a terrible takola. El Omar Abaye, b'shiva dekuli amalo pligi de mechayva. What we're going to establish is that regarding the machlokes chachom and Rabbi Yehuda, regarding the lishkas of Sanhedrin, during those 7 days that the Kohen Gadol lives in the lishka prior to Yom HaKippurim, everybody agrees, even Rabbi Yehuda would agree, that during that period of time, the Lishka Sanhedrin takes on the status of a bias. And therefore, on a Torah level, it's chayiv in mezuzah. And therefore, in sukkah, for those 7 days that I live in the sukkah has the status of a bias. Such that if I bring peros that are chayiv in maser into the sukkah, during sukkahs, I'm chayiv in afrosha. And so too, during those 7 days of Sukkot, I'm chayiv in mezuzah. So what is then the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chacham? Ki pligi b'shar yemos hashana. What's the status of the Lishkas Farhedrin during the balance of the year? He's only living there during 7 days. Now, what happens after those 7 days? Rabbanan Tzavri, yes, he's chayiv in mezuzah in the Lishkas Farhedrin the whole year round. Why? Gazrinon shar yemos hashana atu shiva. Once the Torah says that for 7 days, that lishka must have a mezuzah, we're afraid that if we say that the other days of the year are potter, then he might come to assume, mistakenly, that even during the 7 days in which he's quarantined in the lishka safarajin, he is exempt from mezuzah. Therefore, we were machayev him mezuzah the whole year round. So the people shouldn't make this mistake and think that he's potter even during the 7 days that he lives. Rabbi Yehuda Savalo Gazrinon. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't require mezuzah the balance of the year. He's not afraid that if we potter him from mezuzah, he'll come to assume that he's potter even during Shiva Sayyamim. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the chiyuv of mezuzah of the Kohen Gadol is during those 7 days, 7 day period, because for those 7 days he's living there in a dira gemura and has the status of a bayis for those 7 days. Amale Rava says to Abaye, how can you tell me that everybody agrees, both the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda, that if you have a dira that is only designated for a segment of the year, a special period of time, that is Chayim and Mezuzah min HaTorah, but Sukkah Sachag B'Chag Ketoni, the Mishnah in Masros says that when they sit in the sukkah during Chag HaSukkos, the Chachamim say that they're potim from mezuzah. Let's go back and reread the Braisa, revisit the Braisa. The Braisa says, Sukkah Sachag Bechag, during the 7 days, Rabbi Yehuda Bechai v'Chachamim potrim. But now you're telling me that even the Chachamim agree that during the 7 days of Sukkos, there's a chiyuv of mezuzah. How can you say such a thing when it says explicitly that Chachamim potrim, that the Chachamim potrim is referring to Maser, but the same thing applies to Mezuzah? El Amar Rava, Rava says something different. B'shar Yemos Hashanah Kuli Amalo Pli the Ptura. There was never a Machlokes during the balance of the year. The 7 days of Sukkos is not enough to generate a Shem Bayis such that the Sukkah would need a mezuzah the whole year round. Keep pligi b'shiva. The machlokas revolves around the 7 days of Sukkos, or in the case of the Kohen Gadol, the 7 days that he lives in the Lishka Safar Sanhedrin. And the Chacham say that there's a chiyuv mezuzah during the 7 day period of the Lishka Safar Sanhedrin. As far as a Sukkah is concerned, the Rabbanan say yipotah. And Rabbi Yehuda says just the opposite. He says that the Lishka Safar Sanhedrin is Patur, and the Sukkah is Chayav. The Sukkah time Elichud, the Lishka time Elichud. And the Machlokas here really splits into two different independent issues. Sukkah time Elichud, what's the Machlokas here between Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda? And Rabbi Yehuda says that a Sukkah is considered a bias, and it's Chayv Mezuzah, L'tamei, the Omar Sukkah Diras Keva Be'inon, that a person has to build a sukkah in a way that he can live in that sukkah the whole year round. And therefore, Machayv Mezuzah, it has the same status as a bias, because it's got to be a Diras Keva. Rabbonin L'tamei, the Omar Sukkahs, Dira Aroi Be'inon, Diras Aroi. This machlokes is at the beginning of Masechta Sukkah. The Chachom say that a sukkah is dafka a sukkah saroi, right? It should not be built as a permanent structure. It's memela lo machayv b'sukkah. The mezuzah, therefore, there's no chiyuv mezuzah. It's not a bayis. It's only a dir saroi. Lishka time elichud, and now we have a separate machlokes with regard to lishka Sfar Hedrin. Rabbanan savri dira bal kochash me dira, which means that if a person is obligated by mitzvah HaTorah, he's mandated by the Torah to live in a certain place, he himself has no interest on his own to live in that place. That's called a dira, because the Torah requires him, and to fulfill God's will, he's going to live there. Therefore, he's chayav in mezuzah min HaTorah. Rabbi Yehuda Sovet dira bal korcha lo shmei dira, and therefore the Lishka Sfar Hedrin is not chayav in mezuzah, according to Rabbi Yehuda, because that's not called a dira. He's being forced at gunpoint by Torah law to live in the sukkah for 7 days. The Rabbanan insisted that the Lishka Sfar Hedrin should be equipped with a mezuzah. And why? Shelo yomru kohen gadol chavush bebeis asurim. That it shouldn't appear to the onlooker as if the kohen gadol is incarcerated in a jail. And that's why he's potter from mezuzah. So therefore, we're going to require that we put up a mezuzah. He writes here in the note, Klomar, Kevon sheyedu she'en mezuzah belishka, machmashi dira bal korcho, yavo lomar shu chavush ba.
he's locked up there. Lefi Rava Bir HaBraisa Kachu L'das Chachamim Lo Hayu Mezuzos B'chal Lishkos B'migdash Chutzi Milishkas Farhejn Shakon Gadol Darba Shivas Yomim Omer Lehem Rabbi Yehuda Rei Lishkos Sheshomu Behen Lo Hayu Mezuzos B'hechrech Hatam Shepturos Who came in Chakonim Shomrusham Balkorcham Mitzad Mitzus Hator Vidira Balkorchen Adira Imkain Af Lishkas Farhejin Petura Minator Mitam Ze Ella Shagazru Ba Kideshlo Yomu Kohen Gadol Chovish Beis Hasurim Ledas Chachomim Tam Haptur Bishara Lishkos Umishum Sheshomu Behem Rak Balaila Vi Ein Zu Dira Chashuva Mashen Kibel Lishkas Farhejin. So we're going to stop here at the bottom of Daf Yud Amid Beis, the last line, Man Tana.